So this verse onwards up to the next four or five verses And Krishna is explaining the different stages of attachment of bhakti, starting from the highest stage. So this verse is talking about the topmost stage of attachment. Krishna says that just fix your mind on me and engage all your intelligence in me. And he says, me, Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's stressing the personal feature of the Lord. He says, because fixing the mind on something that's impersonal or energy is not sustainable. Maybe God, maybe, definitely not in this day, but in previous ages, people had the mental faculty and the strength to meditate. But even then, beyond a point, there's no sustainability. So Krishna is making it very clear here, just to fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence. And what is the result of that? That you live in me always. And there's no doubt about it. Krishna is giving a perfect guarantee without any disclaimer or any writers that we are used to in the material world. So now let's look at the elements in this verse. The first aspect is fix your mind. Krishna says, because we have seen in the earlier chapters of Bhagavad Gita, particularly in the third chapter, where Krishna explains the constitution of how the material elements constitute the body, what are the different roles of different senses and everything. So there Krishna explains that the senses are superior to matter, and above the senses is the mind, and above the mind even is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. So intelligence is the next door neighbor of the soul. And Prabhupada, the purport also explains very much in detail what happens is, because the mind is the center of all activities. So if the mind is contaminated or is polluted, then it drags everything else down. The mind is the center. Prabhupada writes, Krishna says also in the third chapter, that mind is the center of lust. So all the desires, the propensities are first originating in mind. So what happens as a result of that, the senses will drag the mind, because the mind will go behind that, the sense of objects and the sense of gratification. As a result, the intelligence is also polluted. It's like a corruption in the offices, this corruption, it goes from top to bottom. It's not that the corruption is seated only at a particular area of the office, it's actually top to bottom. So in the same way, when the mind is corrupted or polluted, the right intelligence also along with it. Once the intelligence is dragged, because the soul is next to intelligence, the soul also is dragged. And as a result, the soul identifies, it forgets its natural position. The soul forgets that it is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. It forgets it and it is consumed by the false ego, and it identifies itself as a matter, or the false body. So as a result of this, we get entangled in different activities, material activities, and we keep rotating in the cycle of birth and death, as it is explained in detail in Bhagavad Gita. So that's why Krishna is here telling, fix your mind, because that is the first thing that you need to control. So once the mind is controlled, the senses are automatically brought under control, because mind is the master of senses. The example is very nicely illustrated in, if you take the Bhagavad Gita, the color plates, so the recent editions. In the color plates, you have a nice picture of the horse, the five horses, which are pulled by a rein, and then there is a chariot driver. So this represents actually the scenario we just discussed. So the horses actually are the senses, so they are driving away in different directions. The rein is the mind, and the chariot driver is intelligence. So the horses are running in different directions. The driver cannot really control the rain. As a result, everything is going everywhere. There is no direction. Whereas if the intelligence is clear, when the vision is clear, because the lust actually covers the true position of the soul. It's a covering, and the covering is also described in detail in Bhagavad Gita, different types of covering. So because of that, the vision is clouded. The vision is clouded, we can't really know what is where we're going or whether we're going in the right direction. So the first thing that Krishna tells is fix your mind. And what is the process of fixing the mind? The first thing that we need to do, as a matter of putting it into practice, is to remove the lust. Remove the lust is easier said than done. What Krishna recommends, or even Prabhupada recommends in this purport as well as various other literatures, the mind needs a higher engagement. Because the mind is going behind sense objects, it is entangled, it doesn't have anything else. No? So unless there is a higher engagement or a higher pace, then these lower propensities can be given up easily. If there is something higher, then material world we have the experience, you know, we get something higher, lower, we get something that is lower. So naturally the mind, if it has got something higher, it will give up this engagement and will follow that path. So what is that higher? Guru Maharaj once discussing with me, he told that the mind is actually the center of all pollution. You know, all the root causes of misery, so to speak. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, Jadabharat, chapter by Jadabharat, 11th chapter, Jadabharat is instructing King Rahugana. So there is a nice set of verses which talks about the role of mind. So one verse that Jadabharat says that mind is the root cause for misery. In impure mind, the mind is impure, it identifies with the body. But the same mind, if it is pure, it knows its correct position. So this is what the mind, the role of mind is. It's the biggest enemy, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, as well as the best friend. Provided which way, which side of the things we are in. So the first thing, once we identify that the mind is the root cause of all miseries, we should apply intelligence. Though intelligence is polluted, but we should remember that intelligence also comes from Krishna. So Krishna says in 15th chapter that the root cause of intelligence is also me. So we should pray hard to Krishna that somehow or the other, no, give me the mercy so that I can do some activity, I can be engaged in some activity so that my lower propensities can be given up. So this regard, the Guru Maharaj is saying that we should be aware of material accounts. So material accounts means all the desires that they have, all the attachments to the body and family, the envy, you know, the result of envy. Because everything is based on competition, so there is an envy in the material world. Nobody is the true friend actually. Everybody is looking for some benefit to the other. So envy, attachments to body and extended family and other things, these things actually are material accounts, and unless we settle these material accounts, the mind cannot escape, or mind cannot focus on Krishna. As Krishna says, fix your mind upon me, it will never happen as long as we, you know, one after the other, we are behind these material accounts. So we have to settle these material accounts one by one. So how do we do that? Settlement of material accounts is one of the most important things that practically we have to implement, is to practice a little bit of austerity to start with. Because the moment there is austerity, or austerity doesn't mean that you leave home and wear the garb of a sannyasi and sit in the forest. Austerity means you give up something that is very dear to you, but not artificially giving up or repressing yourself, but actually doing something better, like giving up something, do something better, engage in something better. For example, all of us sitting here, you could have been anywhere else on Saturday evening, but we have given up that propensity to come here and listen and hear the mission of Bhagavad Gita. So there is an occupation like that, alternate occupation. Then we can give up this, we can practice austerity actually. This austerity is very much essential, because Krishna in Srimad Bhagavatam, verse in 4:31:19, Krishna says, the three things if you do, I'll be very happy. Not only satisfied, I'll be easily satisfied. If three things are followed. And those three things are M, mercy. Mercy to other living entities. It is M. And satisfied somehow or the other. Somehow or the other, be satisfied with whatever Krishna has given you. That is S. And C, control of the senses. So austerity is the root of all these things. So master of science, MSc. Mercy, satisfied, somehow or the other, and control of the senses. Here these three, Krishna says, I am easily satisfied. Very easily satisfied. And what else we need apart from satisfying Krishna? That is our whole process is ultimately to satisfy the Lord. He is satisfied, everything is achieved. So austerity must be practiced. It doesn't mean that, you know, it should be gradually practiced. That is why Prabhupada has given us regulative principles. These are regulative, these are not repressive principles. Means you stop everything, no. These are very practical guide. It's a practical guide for everyone to follow. Not that we have to give up our job, or no, we have to be a brahmachari or nothing. Sthaneya kita, whichever position you are, you can practice this, regulative principles. The four regulative principles, no meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. These four practice things you practice, then these are the four pillars on which the devotional service can go here on the devotional platform, starting at the starting stage. That is why we have to give up the lower propensities. That's why the respiratory principles and nature so that we can control and engage elsewhere our energy. Because we can't be actually sitting quiet. Krishna says that not a single moment can the soul be inactive. We can be inactive. There has to be some engagement. So it better be some positive engagement rather than due to ignorance we get involved in negative things. The other thing is, you know, the mind is a material creation. It is not something spiritual. So naturally, the mind being material will always give us material logic. It cannot never give us spiritual logic on its own, unless it is guided by something higher. So what can it be guided by? It can be guided by intelligence. So intelligence is higher than the mind. And intelligence being the next door neighbor of the soul, it is the closest that you can get to spiritual knowledge or influence. So, a person who is, after having gone through his material problems one after the other, if somebody, by the mercy of the Lord, gets the intelligence that what is he doing? Why are we wasting his time? Letting behind temporary things. Because if you follow the mind, you can only get things up to a point. And it's only temporary because it's all material. It's nothing spiritual. So somebody comes to this understanding, that is the starting step. And that performing austerity or following certain regulative principles help us to come to that starting stage. Once you come to that stage, then you start inquiring. If there is no solution in this material world, then where else the solution lies? No, he starts inquiring. There is a genuine inquiry. When the genuine inquiry is there, the Lord dies again. Because he's in the heart of everyone's soul. He dies. This person, this soul is inquiring. So I'm not showing some way. So then he shows. Somehow or the other he comes in touch with the devotee of the Lord. Comes from them. Or he comes across with Prabhupada's groups or such literatures. Then he starts slowly reading. He tries to find inquiry to the truth. Krishna says in 7th chapter that such people are considered pious. Those are inquiring. So who is pious? Krishna always helps them. Those Krishna is equal to everybody, but he who is eager to come to him, he gives help more than that. So somehow or other he comes in touch with literatures, and he gets the knowledge, the intelligence is slowly cleared. The pollution is slowly removed. It's like a cloth on the mirror, you wipe it and the mirror becomes clear. Like that, intelligence is slowly clear. And what happens when the intelligence is clear? It can then function in its normal role. And what is the normal role? To discriminate between what is good and what is bad. Earlier, it was being pulled by the mind. So all the discriminative power was lost. Because it is being dragged. If the horses are dragging, the chariot driver cannot go anywhere. He will be going there anywhere. So if it's not under control, then he can see properly which direction he needs to go. So then he can discriminate what is good, what is bad, what is right, what is wrong. So at that stage, then he understands. Then he gets the knowledge, transcendental knowledge, beginning stage. Then he develops the desire to, that's what Srila Prabhupada Goswami has recommended, says, Adho Shraddha Tatha Sadhu Sangha Tatha Bhajana Kriya. The first thing is Adho Shraddha. You have a little bit of faith by going to the literatures. You get some knowledge. And then you anchor for something more. But you want to find out what is there. It's all this knowledge is fine, but is there anything that you can do? Then he gets association of devotees. Once he gets association of devotees, then he starts hearing more and more. Then the faith builds up, it solidifies. So from Shraddha it becomes Nishtha, it solidifies, solid faith through the process. Once the Nishtha is there, then he is committed. He is committed. That's when he accepts the shelter of the spiritual master. When the spiritual master guides him, trains him, what is he training him? Trains him in the science of devotion service. Nothing else. That is the role of the spiritual master. He has no other business than to guide his disciples in the art of devotion service. And so he is in that. So the life analogy given that this whole material world is like a big ocean, and we are all struggling, swimming in the water. Even an expert swimmer cannot succeed because the ocean is so big, sharks and all the dangerous aquatic animals. Somehow or the other, if he manages to find the boat, he can hold on to it. The spiritual master is like the captain of the boat or the ship who pulls you up into the, provided you throw a hand. He's always there to pull you, but unless you are desirous, then he cannot help you. So that desire should be there to get out of this miserable cycle. So he pulls you, and then the ship moves. How does the ship move? Because the ship needs favorable winds. No, winds the favorable directions to move. So those favorable winds are the directions given in the scriptures. Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita, Shrimad Bhagavatam. These are the favorable winds which guide the boat, the ship. And under the guidance of the expert spiritual master, the captain, we reach the destination. We cross the ocean of suffering into the other side. Eternal bliss. So we saw how the mind can be engaged. Jara Bharat actually continues to give instructions rather than the next subsequent verses. After explaining that the mind is root cause, he goes on to explain that the mind can be controlled. He tells Ravana, I'll just read the line. O king, please try to conquer this mind by the weapon of service to the lotus feet of the spiritual master and the supreme personality of Godhead. So this is the solution. To control the mind, you simply have to engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord through the agency of the spiritual master. So naturally, once that happens, the mind is constantly engaged. The best example we can think of is Amrish Maharaj. The ninth canto of Amrish Maharaj's activities are described in detail. It says, Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo, which means all the time mind is fixed to the lotus feet of the Lord. Which means what? It means there are activities surrounding this concentration of the lotus feet. And nothing, no one can be more exemplary than Amrish Maharaj engaging all the senses. When you fix the mind, which means you are engaging the senses. Because the role of the mind is to control the senses. So once the mind is fixed, automatically the senses are engaged. In what? So Amrish Maharaj life stories, his eyes were always busy seeing the beautiful form of the Lord. His nose smelling the tulsi flowers offered at the lotus feet. His ears and always hearing Krishna Katha, glories to the Lord. His mouth and offering the prasadam. Like that, each and every particle or each and every limb of the body was completely engaged in service of the Lord. And this is the way. This is the way for us to be properly situated. Because this human form of life is very rare. If you get, as we go through this process, we know how rare, how difficult it is to get this human form of life. And only in this form of life do we have this faculty of intelligence that allows us to discriminate between what is good and what is bad. So scriptures are given for that purpose. So we take shelter of scriptures, we take shelter of Guru, Sadhu Sangha, these three strong pillars, then we can easily be removed from this entanglement. So we saw how the intelligence is now well positioned. So once the intelligence is cleared about the pollution, it can, as it controls the mind, it can then engage the mind. What can it engage the mind in? So the next point is Krishna is telling here. After fixing your mind, engage all your intelligence in you. So what does it mean? It means that what is intelligence? Intelligence tells you what to do, what not to do. Which means it tells you, directs you, what are the activities. Good means this, now he is properly situated, so he knows what is good, what is bad. Good means anything that is favorable to devotional service is good. Anything that is unfavorable is bad. So this discrimination is there. So that way the intelligence is now able to guide the mind, and the mind enters the senses to completely be engaged in Krishna consciousness. And once the mind is fixed, as we saw here, what happens? Because now once the mind is fixed and all the activities engaged, the practicing devotee is completely, in love with the personality of Godhead. He has a genuine, because the love is already there in everyone's heart. It is just lying dormant. Just once the mirror of the heart is cleared, the love will just spring up. So once this process is actually a cleansing process that we are all going through. So once that happens, the dormant love just breaks up, and once that happens, the personality of Godhead, any form that you see in the temple, he doesn't see it as just a form. He actually, there's a reciprocation. That's why in Bhagavatam it says, Ikshanam. Ikshanam means audience of the Lord. in Bhagavatam it says, Ikshanam. He is not just saying, there is a reciprocation, there is a mutual exchange of love between the Lord and the devotee. So when the Ikshanam happens, so then, focus his mind on the beautiful form of Krishna. And the beautiful form of Krishna is described by Srila Prabhupada in one of his purports. When a person fixes his mind on the eternal, exquisite form of Shyamasundara, the blackish, beautiful Lord Krishna, all distress and anguish are vanquished. Just see the beauty of the statement. Just the fixing your mind on the beautiful form of Lord, the three-pointed form of Lord Krishna, or a Shyamasundara form, all distress and anguish are vanquished. Just vanquished. This connection, this small pastime which I recently read, this is about Shripad Shankaracharya's mother. So Shripad Shankaracharya's mother was sick, she was on a deathbed. Shripad Shankaracharya at that point of time, he was preaching his philosophy along with his disciples, so he was traveling. But through his mystic power, he came to know that his mother was sick. So immediately he came by his mother's side. His mother, as soon as she saw him, she was very pleased. She said, "Oh, finally you've come." He was a sannyasi, so he was never at home. So finally she was very happy that at this time at least you came. So now you can do me some help. You can tell me what I should do now, because I'm going to leave my body. What should I do now? You tell me. So Shripad Shankaracharya, though he was a sannyasi, but he was on the platform of detachment, but then still, in this particular instance, he actually listens to his mother and he says, "Yes, I will tell you." Then he starts describing all his philosophy, impersonal Brahman, this energy, that life, this, that. Mother, although already when she was disturbed, he gets more disturbed. And she's more disturbed because she can't take this. All these disturbances, So Shankaracharya understands the desire and he's fine. And then he switches gear, so to speak. Then he goes and describes the beautiful form of Lord Vishnu. Beautiful form of Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha. He's sitting with Lakshmi Devi, Bhudevi, all his associates, Garuda is there. He's sitting in his beautiful throne, golden throne, wearing all his paraphernalia, describes what he's wearing, his crown, his earrings, all the paraphernalia which you see in the tradition. The moment Shankaracharya starts describing this, his mother is completely at peace. All the distress and anguish are vanquished. So all the complete peace, she is peaceful. And the moment she gets that peace of mind, she can envision the Lord's form in the heart. She could see the four-handed form of Vishnu in the heart. And at that point, she just leaves the body. And then the Vishnu Dutas come and take her in the airplane to Vaikuntha. So here, we see here, though we say the Shripad Shankaracharya is impersonal, but actually, if you go deep behind his teachings, he's completely accepted. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's just that, just like we have the parampara somewhere along the line which is spoken. So as a result of this, today what we see is not actually teachings. His teachings are very, very clear. He says, Bhaja Govindam Moodamate. He's telling, "Oh fools, you have nothing else to do in this world. Just worship Krishna, Govinda, nothing else. That is the only duty. You may do whatever you want, whatever philosophy you preach, whatever, but at the end of the day, unless you take shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, nothing is going to happen." About engaging the intelligence, as Krishna says, once the mind is fixed, how to engage the intelligence in me. This also is very clear here as the chapter is titled Devotional Service. So engagement has to be in devotional service, nothing else. And Bhagavatam, first chapter, second canto, we have a chapter called Devotional Service, Divinity and Devotional Service. So there Krishna says that by entering in devotional service, automatically you get knowledge and renunciation. That is causeless. It happens as a byproduct of devotional service. So, what happens when you get knowledge? When you get knowledge, again, intelligence is strengthened. And the faith is solidified. Then, as a result, detachment also comes along the way. Because automatically you are detached from it. Because devotional service means active engagement in service of Krishna. Which means no engagement in anything else. So, detachment comes automatically. So this way, this is the right way to engage intelligence. But many times we find, as we are neophyte devotees, to me I always find there's still a lot of doubts lurking in the mind. Because we don't have complete faith yet. At least I don't have complete faith. When I'm sitting here talking about faith, I don't have complete faith yet. It's still in the process. At such times, but still there is a way out. So, Prabhupada writes that doubts and restlessness, whenever they come and attack us, doubts and restlessness, we should simply take shelter of the Lord's devotees. Simply be in association. That sadhu sangha is the most important thing for such situations. The moment you are in the sadhu sangha, then you are convinced. Because what do the sadhus do? They talk, they glorify only, stay the next. They don't have anything else to do other than glorifying the Lord. And not only they speak, glorify, they also perform activities. So you see that you hear that they're speaking and you see that they're doing something. Both are in line. This way, our doubts are removed. And there's no more restlessness. Because we see that they're speaking something and doing the same thing. Unlike, you know, where we see outside that you speak something and do something else. There's no duality. It's all the same. Whatever is spoken is done. That's why Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada writes that religion without philosophy is fanaticism. And philosophy without religion is mental speculation. So Krishna consciousness is a combination of both. There is religion, which is devotional service, Sanatana Dharma. There is philosophy, which is the topmost philosophy, you know that. So there is a marriage of both. That's why it is the topmost science. And why is it a science? Science means you theorize, you put forward a theory, and then you do an experiment to confirm the theory. Devotional service is exactly that. All the philosophy is there. And that is put into practice. The same. The examples of all, I mean, Srimad Bhagavatam is full of examples of the devotees of the Lord. What they do, you know, it's putting into practice all the teachings that Lord Krishna has taught, and put into practice in Bhagavatam. Even if you don't trust, you know, these characters in Bhagavatam, saying that, you know, even in India, this day is mythology. The children's CDs are sold, Krishna. It says Hindu mythology, you know. The thing is the mind. So, there's no faith basically. Even if we don't trust what is in Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, we have Srila Prabhupada, example before us. He was there, you know, we have personally seen his, personally seen him walking on the earth. Not in the sense physically, but we have seen. So we have seen the example of Srila Prabhupada, who is an exemplified devotee. You know, all that we see in Bhagavatam is exemplified by Srila Prabhupada. In fact, my Guru Maharaj was saying that he is the modern day version of Narada Muni. Narada Muni, what does he do? He travels around the world, all the material worlds and the spiritual worlds, just to glorify the Lord. And what does Srila Prabhupada do? He knows that it's the same thing. He must be enacting his pastimes elsewhere now. He is doing the same thing that he did here. He travels the globe so many times just to preach the glories of the Lord and bring all the fallen people back to, you know, on the path to go back home. So we have the life of Srila Prabhupada before us. What else do we need to get convinced of? And no, it is, and on top of that, we have experienced it ourselves. That's what Srimad Bhagavatam says, Swa Anubhavam. We have experienced ourselves. So what do we do once we experience? We should share the knowledge. We should share the experience with others. Once we experience, we see that it is working, we should spread the knowledge. Distribute the knowledge. That is the service that we have to always engage in. Further say in Bhagavad Gita 18:70 about the engagement of right engagement of intelligence. It says that, and I declare that he who studies the sacred conversation of ours, that is in Bhagavad Gita between Arjuna and Krishna, worships me by his intelligence. This is a beautiful word. Worships me by his intelligence, which means what? There is no sentiment. There is no sentiment. There is a solid devotional service is on the foreground of full knowledge. It is not, you know, there's some black spots here and there. No. It's completely on the foreground of full knowledge. That's why Srila Prabhupada says that always never accept any philosophy blindly. Even Krishna Pada, when people come beginning, not accept anything blindly. Go through it, be convinced of it yourself, and then this faith is solidified. Unless the faith is shaky, then you may practice sometime, but then you're not continuing. But even then there is nothing to worry. Even if you start the process and maybe you find that, part of the mark or you're not able to follow it, still there is no loss. Because Krishna guarantees again. Neha Vikrama Nashosti Pratyavayana Vidyate Swalpam Apiyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mandobhaya. There is no loss or diminution in this activity. Even 1% activity done here will assure you that you start from 2% in the next life. That is material. Life is not like that. You have to put 100%. And once the 100% is there, you may get results, but that will die off, that will be temporary again. So Krishna is giving guarantee here. Whatever you can perform, whatever your capacity is allowed, perform that. There is no loss. So now, either way there is nothing to lose. It's only something to gain. So that's why it's very important that we have to take time. We have to take time out, perform a little bit of austerity, little bit of renunciation, to hear the talks of the Lord. Prabhupada writes nicely in one of the small books, it's called Renunciation to Wisdom. He says, if Arjuna found time to hear Bhagavad Gita in the middle of the battlefield, then what urgent business do we have that we cannot hear Bhagavad Gita? In the middle of the battlefield, we had time to hear. What business do we have? Are we so busy that we are fighting a war that we don't have time to hear? So we have to provide time. That's where you know, the austerity comes in. A little bit of austerity here and there, you give a little bit of things that you are so attached to. Not that you have to do everything. That Krishna will take care. Once you come here, you take care of everything else gone. But from your side, you do a little bit of endeavor. Come and hear the topics of law. Because this is the only medicine. Power to the. This is the only medicine out of this cycle. Nothing else. In the last chapter, last verse of the 6th chapter and in the last verse of the 9th chapter also, Krishna is actually saying the same thing to Arjuna. So these points are repeated. So the last chapter he says, Yogina Bhakti Sarvesham. Among the yogis, the topmost transcendence is the Bhakti Yogi. And what does he do? He is always engaged, thinking about me, living in me, always. And the last chapter, last verse of the 9th chapter is the same thing. Manmana Bhavamantra. Same thing. Always be, worship me, pay obeisance to me, engage your senses, everything unto me. Now the same thing here, but of course the emphasis is more on the personal worship. That's why Krishna is stressing that again. So once the mind is fixed and the intelligence engaged, what is the output of that? Krishna says, you will live in me always, without a doubt. Now we saw in the recent financial crisis, you know, people repose their faith in so many things and they have lost their life savings. Despite knowing that those guarantees are not really guarantees, you know, so-called guarantees, a lot of disclaimers here and there, people get lost in the fine print, they don't know what is there. But still they repose their faith and they have lost their life savings. And here Krishna is telling, without a doubt, people don't have to, you know, ask 100 questions or we lost them. So that is the way it seems. So living in me always. So what does living in me mean? Does it mean that we merge into him? No. Krishna has already explained very clearly in Bhagavad Gita in the 2nd chapter that everyone is an individual soul. You were individual personality, you are now an individual personality, you will continue to remain an individual personality. You will never lose your existence. So what does living in me mean? Once the devotee practices these things which I have told in the first line, fixing the mind and engaging intelligence, he comes to a platform of transcendence. In that position, he is completely out of the contamination. There are no material things that are affecting him. So he sees things as they are. So in that sense, he is in a spiritual position. What is the spiritual position? Satchidananda Vigraha. He is full of his eternal position, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And that is also the Lord's position. But you must be very clear here. There is no oneness. There is oneness but in quality. He sees the qualitative oneness between himself and Krishna. Because he sees the same qualities present in him. And as a result, he can also see things as they are, which means he sees Krishna in everything and everything in Krishna. That's it. So Krishna also says in 9th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th chapter 68 verse. Say, the pure devotee is always at the core of my heart. And I am always at the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me. And I do not know anyone else but them. This is what is meant by living in me always. Constantly engaged. Right? Always thinking about it, meditating upon him, doing service. There is no other engagement. 24 hours a day, chanting and engaging in different activities. So in this situation, there is nothing else you can see except Krishna. This also means that he sees Krishna in the heart of everyone, living entity, as well as non-living entity. Because everything ultimately comes from Krishna. So even the material elements, everything we see, you know, Krishna's present there. And we extend it further by seeing Krishna's hand in everything that we are going through. So once we do this, once we see that, so Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 5th chapter last verse, that Bhoktaram Ekam Tapasam, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. So he explains this quality, you know, that he is a supreme enjoyer, enjoyer of all sacrifices. He is the owner of everything. So what is there that we have? No, we don't have anything. So we simply have to submit to Him and try to satisfy Him, whatever little capacities we have. He doesn't need anything, but He is happy, He is satisfied if He enters at His profession. So once we understand the supremacy of the Lord, that He is the control of everything, and whatever is happening by His will, whatever is happening to us, good or bad, we should not worry about that. It's happening by His will, then what is there for us to lament for or worry? Nothing. So the moment we come to this conclusion, all lamentation and fear just goes away. So once it has also said that all anguish and distress are all anguish and distress are vanquished. Because we understand the position that He is supreme, He is the Lord of everything. Nothing for us to worry about. So that situation there is no lamentation. So then we see that there is hand of Krishna and everything. So that also means that He is living in Krishna. Living in Krishna. So there is no doubt about it, as Krishna says. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada actually, if you study Bhagavad Gita in detail or Bhagavatam, wherever there is a philosophy mentioned in the verse, Prabhupada provides practical instructions in the purport. It is not in the air, it is on the ground. So whatever one may say, you know, fix your mind, if you didn't have the purport, you would have been totally lost. Just fix your mind upon me, engage in Jainism, what does it mean? It seems that you sit here and just close your eyes and meditate. That way hope that mind will fix. No. So Prabhupada gives nice instructions, practical instructions for us to follow in the purport. What does Prabhupada say? He highlights two activities. One is one who is constantly chanting the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. One who offensively chants the holy name of the Lord. Very important. One who offensively chants the holy name of the Lord, Krishna and his internal potency, Ramchandra Radharani, are dancing on the tongue of the devotee. Which means what? He is personally associating with the Lord. Because the name of the Lord and the Lord are non-differential. But in a platform where we are, you know, initial neophyte service, neophyte devotees, we are not on the platform of offensive chanting. So what is that we can do? Prabhupada also gives us instructions. What, let's say we offend, in the practicing stage it happens that we don't teach things as they are, so we offend, many times we offend devotees. So what do we do when we offend devotees? We simply submit ourselves, fall at the feet and ask for forgiveness. Same way, when we commit offenses against the holy name, we have to submit to the holy name and pray for the holy name's mercy, because as you know, the name is actually more powerful than the Nami, than the Lord. So we have to submit. And Prabhupada actually, in one of the purports in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada writes that we can offer choice prayers to the holy name. Before chanting, we can offer nice prayers. One such prayer is, Nivritta Tarshe Rukakiya Manat Bhavoshada Shotra Mano Viramat Yaduttama Shoka Gunanu Vadat Kumani Rajita Vika Pashutnat. This is 10.14 of Srimad Bhagavatam, which establishes the principle for correct glorification of the Lord. How the Lord should be glorified. Glorification of the Lord means also chanting His name, everything is same. How should the Lord be glorified? He should be glorified in the parampara system by hearing, by oral reception to the spiritual master. And once this happens, who will not be attracted except those who are pillar of his own soul, is what the verse says. So once we submit to the holy name, then we can expect the mercy of the holy name and we can come to that platform. The other thing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also mentioned is only in the state of humility and free of pride can one chant the holy name of the Lord. So this also is very important. And as we saw, the practical implementation of all this is to, once we practice regulative principles and practice a bit of austerity renunciation, automatically these qualities will start to manifest. In fact, in 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, all the qualities are also mentioned. Humility, pride, sensitivity. So these automatically manifest in a devotee who is constantly engaged in the service of the Lord and the spiritual master. So once the humility is there, then we can expect to come to the platform of senseless chanting. So once you have that platform, then everything automatically is taken care of by the Lord. Because you are really, what are we doing by chanting? We are asking the Lord, crying to the Lord, asking for mercy to our people, engaging in service. That is what you are asking for, praying for. So then Krishna gives the service. And then we are constantly engaged. The other thing Krishna says is offering food service. Now Prabhupada says, offering food service. So he says the devotees offer foodstuffs to Krishna and Krishna personally eats them and then gives the prasad, remnants. This is what we are also practicing in deity worship. But we should have firm explain that this process works, as Prabhupada writes here. In this connection, in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada writes among the purpose very nicely. It says, Ahara Shuddho, that is sanctified food. Ahara Shuddho, Sattva Shuddhe. That is, by eating sanctified food, your existence, very existence becomes purified. Sattva Shuddhe. Once the existence is purified, smritha lambeti, smritha dhruvasthati, dhruvasthati, which means your finite tissues, your memory are purified. This is purified. Eating sanctified food, existence purified, finite tissues and memory are purified. Once the memories, finite tissues and memory are purified, smriti labde sarva grantinam vipra moksha, then you can come to the platform of liberation. Liberation here means liberation of material bondage, engagement in devotional service. That is what Krishna considers all about. That is what Prabhupada has given us. All deity worship, the great principles of devotional service. So exactly this. So we come, we sanctify and come to this platform from which the springboard for us to go into the spiritual world. So with this I will conclude here. Any comments or corrections? Questions can be brought to facilitate with this. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Gurudev ki, Srila Gurudev ki.